Hello, I'm Elena Del Valle, and this is the HispanicNPR.com podcast. My guest today is Laura Moritz, Senior Loan Originator at Classic Mortgage. We will discuss reverse mortgages for seniors. According to her bio, as a Senior Loan Originator at Classic Mortgage, Laura has successfully originated more than $500 million of traditional and reverse mortgages. And over the past 35 years, she has assisted thousands of consumers with their mortgage needs. Growing up in a real estate family, Laura learned a great deal about the ins and outs of the industry at a young age. She's licensed in New York, New Jersey, and Florida. Laura, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Let's kick off our conversation with our usual conflict of interest statement.
Okay.
Who do you represent for purposes of today's interview?
I represent myself, and I'm employed as a licensed banker, NMLS number 57959, at Classic Mortgage in Maywood, New Jersey.
Great, thank you. Tell us a little bit about Classic Mortgage. Is it a privately owned company? Is it a publicly traded company?
Classic Mortgage is a privately held bank. Believe it or not, I've worked there for 24 years, which in this industry is unheard of. Most people in this industry tend to flit from bank to bank. The main office is in New Jersey in Maywood, which is Bergen County. But I'm licensed in many different states. But that's where I hang my banking license. Yes, correct. It's a small independent bank, a mortgage bank, and all we do is close and fund mortgages.
And who actually owns the company?
Actually, the bank is owned by Larry DeNike, who unfortunately passed in September of 2024. So his family and his estate, Tina DeNike and such, has taken over the bank.
So it's a family that owns the mortgage company?
That's correct, a family-owned business.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about the big picture. According to Investopedia, you'll have to tell us if this is correct information, there are about 32,000, let's call it 33,000 borrowers of home equity conversion mortgages, which I think is what reverse mortgages are.
That's correct. It's a version of a HELOC, which is the acronym. You can get a home equity line of credit. That's not a reverse mortgage, just being a regular line of credit, but those loans are different in the regard that you have to make payments on those loans. A reverse mortgage is a specific type of HELOC or home equity line of credit designated for homeowners 62 years or older. At the net end of the mortgage is you don't have a mortgage payment, which is different than any other HELOC.
Let's go back for a second. The options that you have as a homeowner, if you are trying to get equity out of your home without selling your home, are going to be home equity loans. Is that the generic term?
Yes. I mean, there's several different ways. You can do a cash out refinance and refinance if you did have an existing lien, or you could have a loan come in first and second position, which is just like a line of credit. The problem is you have to income and credit qualify for those loans. The reverse mortgage is unique because the senior doesn't have to qualify using their income or their credit. They're using purely the equity in the home to make the underwriting decision.
And so the reverse mortgages are only available to seniors 62 and older. Is that how it works?
That's correct.
According to this article that I'm looking at, there were 33,000 borrowers of reverse mortgages and 59,000 borrowers of general home equity mortgages. I think this was in 2022 and 2023. Do those numbers sound about right to you for the national level?
I would say, and I would say that you would expect that the numbers for the reverse mortgages to increase. As the financial climate becomes more challenging for people on fixed incomes to survive.
Now, these mortgages are backed by the FHA, so the Federal Housing Administration. Can you explain to us what that means?
Well, they can be. There are several different versions of the program. There is one that's backed by FHA, which means that we have to follow the guidelines of FHA and the federal government. Those loans can be a little bit challenging. For example, FHA won't do condos unless they're on approved list. So I'm also working with some hybrid reverse mortgage programs that are not tied to FHA, where we do have more flexibility and you can potentially qualify with an unwarranted condo, meaning a condo that's not on their approved list, or even the loan size. FHA has loan size maximum limitations that are designated per county in the United States. So every county has its maximum FHA loan limit. Some consumers need loans that are larger than the limit for FHA, so I bring them into this portfolio product for that reason as well.
When you were talking about the FHA list, is this these famous blacklists that come up in a number of articles? There's, I think I read in the Wall Street Journal, there were 1,400 condos just in Florida alone that have been blacklisted. Is this what we're talking about?
You could use the word blacklist, but I don't tend to look at it, view it that way. The approvable list is based on some criteria that makes them comfortable with insuring the loans. A lot of it has to do with the financial strength of the homeowners association. So there has to be, for example, enough money in the budget to run the complex or the building with the expenses that they have. There has to be a certain amount of people who live there versus rent it. There has to be adequate coverage on insurance. There are a lot of condos in Florida in particular. After the engineer request of 2024 came into place, there was a mandated engineer report that every condo building that was more than 30 years old or older, or three stories or higher, would have to pass through this high engineer inspection report. And during that time, there's been a lot of shortfalls, if you will, for a lot of buildings. So a lot of buildings have some deferred maintenance that they have to address before they're, you know, removed from this list, as you know, you refer to as blacklisted. But I review it more and refer to it more as qualifying. So you can, you know, qualify your complex potentially, but there's a lot of complexes that right now, due to financial and structural deficiencies, don't qualify for the program.
Somewhere I read also that if your condo is in a building that is a hotel or is a part of the units are a hotel, I don't totally understand how that works, but I guess some people live in the units and some people lease out the units as hotel units when they're not using them. And so these are not, they don't qualify for FHA loans.
That's correct. There, you think about like a timeshare, for example, or, you know, in some vacation destinations where it might be used more for an Airbnb. A lot of the complexes don't allow you to use the property for those purposes because it does DQ you or disqualify you from having access not just to a reverse mortgage, but a lot of forward mortgages as well. If the books and the guidelines of the community don't match with what the government expects. Yes, there's unwarranted complexes for lots of reasons and not just for reverse mortgages, believe it or not.
And when you say forward mortgage, is that just a conventional mortgage?
That's correct. So these same inadequacies would affect you if you were going to get a regular line of credit or a first mortgage, if the building didn't have adequate reserves in its budget. Or like, as to your point, if you were using, the homeowner was using the unit as a rental property, and there's more than a certain percentage of them that are doing it, you know, in that regard as an Airbnb or a timeshare, that will also DQ the complex, in addition to a lot of the other, items that I mentioned previous.
And why is that? Is it just a higher risk?
Well, so for example, if you've got, let's just use round numbers, 100 people in a complex who are paying their HOA, and the ability for the complex to continue to provide the services necessary, meaning cutting the grass, chlorinating the pool, each complex has its own right idiosyncrasies depending on what services or amenities are there. Maybe paying for someone at the gate or whatever is in their budget. If there's not enough money coming in, the complex or, the entire value of the property will start to diminish as things are not taken care of, right? So it's kind of universal, for condos and co-ops that there's a lot more that you have to consider when you're purchasing and or refinancing, because what your neighbors do has effect on the overall books, let's just say, of the neighborhood, and therefore could, deter your ability to pursue any type of financing, whether it's reverse or a forward mortgage.
This list that exists, the FHA blacklist or qualifying list or however we call it, it's not available for the general public to view. How do people know if their unit falls under that and whether they would be able to qualify for an FHA-backed reverse mortgage?
Okay, let me just interject that it's not just a problem with FHA, it would also be a problem universally with Fannie Mae, which is just another set of guidelines, right? So if you like baseball, think National League versus American League. With banking, think Fannie Mae versus FHA. Basically the same thing, but there's a couple of different rules that are different in the underwriting rule book, so to speak. There are links that you can research your building and see if it's approved on the approved list. But just because your building is on or not on there doesn't mean that the final determination will end there. This is to my point, every day as I'm speaking to you, buildings could be going from the black to the red based on how many owners didn't pay their HOA this month, or how many owners are late on their mortgages, which also affects the complex's ability, or how maybe this weekend 10 people rented out their properties, so that tipped the apple cart, so to speak, in the owner occupancy. So my suggestion is, if you own a condo or any home that has an HOA, you should reach out to a banker periodically and or go to your own association, because they are very aware of what's going on, because they are in charge of the books, right? So they know exactly what information will be revealed, and ask them, based on the current status of the neighborhood, are we approvable? For example, a dog could have bitten somebody last week and somebody filed a lawsuit, and the lawsuit is filed against the homeowners association. You see what I'm saying? And if the amount of the lawsuit exceeds the amount of insurance that the association's carrying, that could potentially deter somebody's ability to get funding in that complex. So it's on a day-to-day, minute-to-minute basis. For each building, for each scenario, we have to send what's called a condo questionnaire to the association when we take an application. The association will fill it out and show us what the reserves look like, what their budget looks like, what their rental concentration currently looks like, are there any open lawsuits, and then we can determine if it's mortgageable in any of the programs, whether it's reverse, Fannie, or FHA. But yes, it is something important to know as a homeowner, and I think the best place to get the information would be directly from the association, because you live there, they will give you freely the information as an owner.
And this is true for condo associations as well as homeowner associations for single family homes?
That's correct, yes.
Let's go back to the basic concept, which is essentially someone who has reached, I think you said the threshold is 62, and they are concerned they're not going to have enough money to live out their lives. They're not going to have enough income from whatever retirement income streams they were expecting, Social Security, a pension, a 401k, and so they're looking for an alternative. Is that how the process starts?
Yes, that could be a piece of it. They could also have some medical issues that require some modifications, some major modifications to be done to their home. Statistically, more than 70% of seniors would prefer to age in place, but the house may not be equipped for them to do that. So they may have to do some modifications to the property, like change the bathrooms or the kitchens. Maybe they need a home health care provider, which they could use the proceeds from the reverse mortgage to pay for somebody to stay with them, whether it's a live-in or, you know, someone who just comes by. There's a lot of reasons why you would potentially need to supplement your income based on, you know, the current economic climate. A lot of people have lost money in their portfolio, their investment portfolios. And maybe you can't continue to take a $10,000 or $15,000 distribution right now. You know, if you're younger, you have a chance for the market to recover. If you're in your 80s, you know, you may have to come up with a plan B and start withdrawing some of the funds from your home and leaving some of the liquid assets in place so that you have a more balanced portfolio.
How do you decide, if you're looking at this issue, which of these instruments is more advantageous?
Well, the big plus, or one of the many big benefits of the reverse, is that there's no monthly payment. So if I look at a senior who's on a fixed income, yes, they might have Social Security coming in combined, let's say $5,000, and they were taking a small distribution. Now their insurance cost has tripled. And, you know, just the cost of living in general, there's a shortfall. Well, if I put them in a traditional home equity line of credit, number one is their income to expense ratio will be too high, meaning they don't make enough money to service the payment. And they're not going to be comfortable making the extra payment. Let's just say a senior needs to put a new roof on the house in order to even maintain insurance, right? This is a really common theme right now. They don't have the money to make the improvements to stay, you know, gainfully insured. So now all of their inheritance, or, you know, their equity that they may have in this free and clear property, is at risk. So for a senior to offer them a solution that lets them get the money, that they don't have to worry about coming up with another $700 a month to make a payment that they don't have. That's the real benefit, that they're able to access their own money without it costing them something every month. If a senior came to me and they had a lot of liquid assets, meaning, you know, the liquidity wasn't a problem, you know, maybe I wouldn't recommend a reverse mortgage. You know, maybe they could qualify for a traditional mortgage contingent on their age and, you know, what other cash flow they had. But for many seniors, cash flow is a huge problem.
Are we talking mainly about homeowners who have paid off their mortgage? Are we still talking about people who have a mortgage in place?
It's both, because the homeowner that paid off their mortgage, okay, now they have all of this equity sitting in this piggy bank, right? That's their home, the roof over their head. Some seniors have mortgages still in place that, you know, they have to come up with $1,200 a month or $2,000 a month. I could use the reverse mortgage just to replace the $2,000 or $200,000 lien that they have on their property with another $200,000 lien, but my lien, or the new lien, won't have a mortgage payment. So that in itself will really help a senior by not having to come up with the $2,000 a month to make the mortgage payment. So we can replace an existing lien with the reverse that has no monthly payment. So it can be used as an instrument in many different ways, whether they do have an existing mortgage or not.
What are the considerations? So when you sit down with someone who is looking to make a decision, forward mortgage, as you described it, reverse mortgage, equity line of credit, what, other than age, and liquidity, which you just told us, what other issues are primary concern?
Okay. Credit also, because in order to qualify for a forward mortgage where you make a payment, you have to have a credit score that's, for the most part, over like a 600, 620, something in that range minimum, right? With the reverse mortgage, they're not looking at your credit score. Again, because you're not making a mortgage payment, they're not concerned about your payment ability, history, so to speak, because there is no monthly payment. So there are some seniors I've run into, they felt overwhelmed. They lost a spouse. They're used to, or what I'm finding also is a lot of seniors in their second or third chapter of their life are cohabitating, but not necessarily married. So if one of the two passes, the surviving partner doesn't get any benefits, right? So they're a little bit overwhelmed and they really just don't know. So they just kind of like stop opening their bills and they stop looking at their mail. The credit gets really, a little sloppy, our payment history does. And I've worked recently with two seniors who almost lost their house in a tax sale because they didn't pay their property taxes. Their kids didn't know, found out on the 12th hour, and luckily we were able to set up an equity kind of escrow, so to speak, so that they don't have to worry next year. The taxes will automatically be paid out of the proceeds of the reverse. So we, in this case, just set it up just for the sole purpose to pay the taxes and the insurance so that they didn't have to worry about their parents missing payments again.
Is it possible for someone to be evicted from their home if they don't pay their property taxes? Tell us a little bit more about that. I thought that you were protected and there would be a lien against your property, but you wouldn't be evicted.
Oh, no, you could lose your house in a tax sale. So, I mean, if you haven't paid your property taxes, yes, there's going to be a lien, but at some point, the town, the municipality, whomever you owe money, they always have the right to pursue their money. And so they can force your house into a tax sale to get their lien paid. So they don't want to just accumulate, year after year, I didn't pay, and then, have cumulative $100,000 of arrears on a homeowner. No, they're going to have a window. And if your taxes aren't paid, they're going to send you a notice. And again, the senior that I was working with stopped opening her mail. So, I said, you're dangerously close to that. They're putting your house on the auction block for a default on taxes.
Is this true in Florida?
Yes, of course.
For some reason, I thought that there would just be a tax lien, but that there would be no foreclosure, there would be no eviction, just that whoever paid off those taxes, because it's somebody else who buys the taxes that you owe, right?
At some point, every county, town, municipality, whomever has ownership, right, whoever has a lien on your property, will reserve the right. So they reserve the right to put your house up for non-payment of taxes. They can call the lien, meaning that they don't want to just accumulate liens on your property. They want to get paid.
There's a lot of controversy around property taxes in Florida and beyond. There was a huge lawsuit in Texas that, last I heard, was won against the property appraiser region, property appraisers for the region, and that was in Texas. And there's a lot of talk in Florida about the excess in property taxes that are being levied by municipalities, because that's their main source of revenue for the municipalities and the counties. Are you seeing an uptick in these foreclosures and evictions of seniors as a result of these taxes and these tax increases?
I haven't really studied the statistics on that to say that I could say that I've seen an uptick or not, but I do know that I'm on the phone all day with new people calling with, issues. And a lot of the phone calls I'm getting are from, the families, the children who might be out of the area in New York or otherwise, saying, you know, I'm just really shocked. My parents just can't pull it anymore. Like, they were doing fine, but all of a sudden, you know, their insurance costs just got so high that they just can't even afford to stay in their house. So I don't think it's just taxes. I think a big piece of this puzzle falls back on the homeowners insurance, which we all know has been, you know, a thorn in many homeowners' sides, especially in a state like Florida, where some of the storms have, you know, created some residual, you know, financial and logistical messes that still have not been cleaned up. So, yeah, I think it's accumulative. I see the cost of insurance being more of a problem for people, the increasing cost of the insurance than the taxes in Florida.
A lot of Floridians, I don't know what the numbers are nationally, but of course, because of what you said and the increases that have been going on in relation to the cost of insurance in the state, a lot of Floridians who have paid off their mortgages, I forget, somebody had the statistic the other day, I think it was like 12% of homeowners who were debt-free, so mortgage-free, were doing without insurance because they couldn't afford the cost of insurance, or the cost of insurance plus the repairs to the house that the insurance companies were requiring, like you were saying earlier. How does that work with a mortgage or a reverse mortgage? Because in order to get the mortgage, you have to have insurance, right?
Yes, but we can help you now. For in other words, if the proceeds of the loan are going to be used to get your insurance good standing, you could go from being uninsured to being insured. We would set it up with you, right, as part of the closing conditions. Because obviously, you can't have any kind of lien on your house with your property uninsured because that's the bank's collateral. They want to make sure that their collateral is protected, as the homeowner should want as well. So some people can't get insurance simply because their credit score is low. So, you know, we can help that too. If you've got bad credit and you can't get insurance, it's a big problem. The lender, whether it's a reverse mortgage, a forward mortgage, a home equity line, a private mortgage, every person who's going to lend you money and use your house as the collateral is going to expect that your house is insured properly. So for that reason alone, we use the tool with the proceeds of the loan to just keep people's insurance payments paid. You know, to see seniors say, "Oh, my house is paid off, so I don't need insurance," is kind of crazy to me because, you know, one storm or one bad scenario and you have a lot to at risk. So whether it's mandated or not, people should have adequate insurance to protect their one of their biggest assets, if not their biggest asset.
That would mean that the last number I came across was, I think it was $12,000 was the average insurance bill for a single family home in the state. So you would be looking at, if we're looking at a single family home, I don't know what the average number is for a condo, because then you're looking at the cost for the building as well as the unit, right? So let's look at the 12,000 for the house, plus whatever repairs, updates, upgrades the insurance company requires. I think they do what they call a four-point inspection. Does that sound right?
That's correct. Well, you would hire a home inspector to do a four-point inspection, and then yes, based on that, those results, you would either be insurable, non-insurable. It would affect your premium, of course.
And what are the four things that they look for?
Well, they're looking at the roof. They're looking at the doors and the windows, the garage doors. They're looking at the air conditioning. They're looking at the hot water heater. You know, they're expecting that some of those components are upgraded and more energy efficient and more so than anything, more storm prepared, more storm efficient. You know, some of these roofs are not adequate. A lot of windows are not protected properly. So yes, you know, getting your house so that it can come through and sail with flying colors to get the best four-point inspection is going to dramatically reduce your insurance premium. So yes, just getting the money from a reverse to do the work necessary to get your house insured so that it's not a $20,000 a year premium is really important to a senior or to any homeowner for that matter.
You would be looking at the costs of whatever the insurance company requires to bring the house up to date or up to the standards that they require. So let's say, I don't know what a new roof is costing now, but even a shingle roof, I'm thinking you're looking at what, $20,000, $30,000?
Yeah, and you get into a metal roof and, you know, some of the other material, you're looking at $50,000. It's a lot of money.
So it could mean that you have to spend $50,000, as you said, plus whatever other, if they have issues with the plumbing or the electrical or the windows. And in addition to that, you have to pay for the insurance, this $12,000 average number that we've got. So we could be looking at $62,000 easily, right, in order to get the house insured and to meet the insurance company standards in order to get the forward mortgage or the reverse mortgage.
That's correct. And if you don't do the work and then you have to get mandated insurance from your lender, the insurance is double or triple that amount. I mean, it's insane. So yes, to get your house so that it's insurable at, you know, like A rate, an A rated insurance premium is really a critical piece of your big financial picture in the state of Florida and other states for that matter.
How does that work with the condo insurance? Because some buildings have been, from what I have read, declined by the insurance companies. Some insurance companies have said they won't insure whole swaths of the state. So you're falling back on, would that be Citizens in Florida?
Yeah, it's a truism, and it's a scary truism for that matter. You know, it really is making people second guess whether they should buy properties in these managed communities. Condos right now, I mean, I saw this storm coming because I knew and was very aware of the December 31st deadline of 2024 for these new engineer reports. And I knew that when the buildings did get around to doing them, that they would reveal a lot of deficiencies, and that they have. So there's a lot of people who are living in buildings that have special assessments, you know, $100,000 special assessments that they don't have the money to pay, you know. So, you know, I helped somebody recently who was in a scenario like that, and we used a reverse for him to buy something someplace else because he really couldn't stay where he was. And because of the financial debacle that was, you know, still ongoing in that building, he couldn't even sell. So he was on, you know, a high floor in the building. The elevator wasn't working. He really needed to sell to buy because he needed his money out of there. And he couldn't. Nobody would buy it because the books are upside down at this point. And he really couldn't stay in the building anymore and go up the stairs to get to his eighth story free and clear condo. So what we did is we rented out his place to somebody. So he's got somebody in there covering the expenses of the HOA. And we used a reverse mortgage to purchase a home for him. So that worked out perfectly for him. He does have a better roof over his head. He's in a single story small home with his son, and he doesn't have a mortgage payment. And right now his tenant is paying for, you know, the HOA fees until the building figures itself out. He just couldn't stay there anymore, and he had no outs.
How do these expenses factor into the amount of the mortgage? How do you decide how much you can mortgage, or in this case, reverse mortgage a property?
It's a very straightforward. It's an algorithm. The older you are, the higher percentage that you get. It's based on the value of the property, right? Minus any existing liens, okay? And then, so the older you are, and it's just done by like a computer model. I'll put in your birthday and what you believe the estimated property value is, and then it will tell you how much money we have access to. So if you're 89, you're going to get a higher percentage of the value of the house than if you're 67. So it's based on the value of the property and your age.
Where do things like the insurance and the costs to bring the property up to insurance and HOA costs, where do all those factor, or do they factor into the calculation?
That doesn't factor into it. It just might be that. So for example, homeowner Bill and Sue, they may take a reverse mortgage and all the proceeds that all they're doing is repairing the house so that it's insurable, right? So at the closing, they might just have money put into an escrow for the purposes of paying the roofer to put a new roof on and the window company to put a new roof, new windows on, and then holding money in escrow that they're going to be paying their insurance and taxes with. And maybe they're not walking out of the closing with any cash, or maybe they're not going to have a monthly check coming to them in the mail or a blank checkbook that they can write, you know, against. Maybe for in this example, the proceeds are used purely for getting the house up to snuff. Maybe that's all the money that's left in the equation, so to speak, right? Based on the value of the property and their age. So I have to look at each case individually to see what the net number allowable is and then see based on their scenario, if I have to spend it on some of the mandated things before they can even consider getting any money just to have, you know, for other things that they may want to do or use it on.
What about an interest rate? How does that work?
Well, there's a lot of different programs, and going back to, like, I'm closing a reverse mortgage tomorrow. It's like a $3 million loan, and that's a portfolio loan. So she had options of either choosing a fixed rate or an adjustable rate. There's usually offered three different scenarios with the senior. One thing that's really important to note is before anything happens with the reverse mortgage, you must take mandatory third-party counseling, reverse counseling, which I totally love that because you pay, I think it's like $120 on average. Like AARP has a list, you can Google search it. And a third-party counselor, which means somebody who has no vested interest in the loan either closing, coming to fruition, or otherwise, is going to stay either on the phone or face-to-face with the senior or by a webinar and go through and explain all their options to them so that they're totally in the know. So by the time I get the senior on the phone and start going through numbers, they're numbers that are specific for their scenario and based on what their preferences are. It keeps everything in a really safe place and makes sure that for me, like, communication and understanding is the most critical piece, especially if you're dealing with seniors, right? So we want their loved ones, their children, and otherwise to also be in the know. So a lot of times I'll get a senior and have one of their children sit in on the counseling session. So everybody's aware of exactly what path we're taking and what our options are. So the rates could vary between 8%, 10%, depending on if you're taking a fixed rate or an adjustable rate, or are you taking a $3 million loan, which is considered priced very different than if you're taking a $330,000 loan, because they're coming from different pools of money, if that makes sense.
Sure, the lenders are going to be different lenders.
Right. They're underwritten different. Going back to saying whether it's an FHA program or a portfolio program, it depends on the loan size. It depends on the credit score. It depends on what type of property it is, meaning is it a condo? Is it a single family home? And then once we determine which program box it fits into, then we can pull up the pricing accordingly.
What about closing fees? Usually when you buy a property, when you have a refinance, any of those transactions come with closing costs. Point. Is that the case as well with a reverse mortgage?
Yes, but it's kind of unique in a reverse mortgage since you're never going to be making a payment, right? So a lot of what you're paying in closing costs and people's perception as to why the closing costs feel so high is you're prepaying your interest. So this is kind of a really important point to get, you know, clarity on. So if you were closing on a forward mortgage, let's say it's $100,000, every month when you make a payment, your payment might be, and I'm making this up, $1,200 a month. And of that, $900 could be interest, and $300 could be principal, and a 30-year note, the way that loans are amortized, they're always interest top-heavy, right, in the beginning. And then as you go forward, they become more balanced, and then eventually you're paying more principal than interest, but it's over the course of time. A reverse mortgage is exactly mirror opposite of that. So if you took the $100,000 loan, the lien on your house might be $130,000. Again, I just made it up based on your life expectancy and your age. The difference between what you borrowed and what is leaned on your house is the interest. So in that model, they may have predicted that you're 90 years old, and they may predict that you're going to live to be 97. So they may have collected 7 years of interest and added that to the principal balance of your mortgage, if that makes sense. Now, you don't unfortunately make it to 97. Let's say you make it to 95. The 2 years that you didn't use the interest, you'll be getting a credit for those 2 years. In other words, it's all done per diem. But again, because you're not making payments, you don't have an opportunity to pay interest. So the interest is added on to the balance. So when people look at closing costs, sometimes they're like, oh my gosh, this is so much. I'm like, but that's your interest payment. That's your interest compounded and added to the base amount of the loan amount. If you looked at how much interest you paid on a forward mortgage, you would have the same reaction when you do the math. In addition to that, yes, there are some closing costs, of course. And again, the counselor will go through with you the different programs and, you know, what the costs are, but you're primarily paying appraisal, title. Title's a big piece of it. You know, your title insurance, the title search, the recording fees, you know, just the closing fees, the tax. In Florida, there's a tax. And all of those would be added, you know, to the base amount of the loan. So you don't have to come out of pocket with anything.
I read somewhere that, I don't quote me, but you will know the answer to this. I think it was Fannie Mae had begun accepting letters from attorneys in lieu of title insurance. With the abbreviation was AOL. Attorney opinion letter, I think it stood.
Mm-hmm. I don't know of any lenders that are accepting those right now. I can't see that that's a good thing, to be honest with you. But because behind the attorney's letter, that's the one thing. He's maybe making a statement as to the liens that may or may not be there. But a big part of the title is not just doing the abstract, but actually insuring the title so that if something does pop up later and you just have one of those attorney's opinion letters, well, who's going to pay the lien off? Do you know what I mean? And that's what title insurance does, is it protects you. It actually happened to me once early in my, you know, my one of my first houses that I bought. You know, the builder, you know, suggested we use their title company because they would give us a discount. And we went with the builder's title company. And then when I went to sell my property, there was an IRS tax lien on my property that didn't belong to me and should have been picked up by the first title company, the builder's title company, and that was his tax lien, by the way. So if I had one of those attorney opinion letters, and he missed it, who was going to pay the tax lien so I could close? So the title company paid the $150,000 tax lien, and then they went after the builder to try to recoup their money, right? So that's the important thing that people need to realize about title. It's not just doing the abstract. That's the quick and easy part. It's also backing up and protecting your position in what, you know, the title insurance. That's, you know, really the main benefit of it.
These are payments, potentially, depending on the circumstances, if I'm hearing you correctly. In some cases with the reverse mortgage, you will be receiving a monthly amount. Is that subject to taxes because you're receiving money? Is that considered income?
No. And that's one of the very, I mean, I add that to one of the top of the list of benefits, that you are, it is non-taxable income, which is, you know, an amazing added value benefit for doing it this way. Definitely non-taxable.
What happens to the title of the property while you have a reverse mortgage on it? Does it change from the homeowner to the mortgage company, or does it stay in the homeowner's name like with a forward mortgage?
It's the same as a forward mortgage. It's a lien on your property. And if you pass, your estate has 1 year to either refinance the lien. So let's just say the kids said, we want to keep this house. Mom and dad owed $100,000 on it. It's worth $500,000. They could either pay off the $100,000, they could refinance it, or they could sell it. And the proceeds of the $500,000 sale would be, you know, minimized or deducted the $100,000 that they owed to the lender, whether it was a reverse mortgage or any other lien for that matter. So there's no difference in the way that the title is held.
Many people are wary of reverse mortgages. Why is that? Why do they have a scary reputation?
Isn't that, to me, that's such a really unfortunate, misunderstanding of a product, or really just lack of understanding, I think. Because I do get people that say, oh my gosh, more so in the past, I think people are starting to actually understand the program better. But, you know, I've heard some financial planners suggest, I don't think it's a good way for a senior to get money. And I said, well, then give me a suggestion on how you could help this couple. Like, there are no other scenario. Sometimes there's no other solutions for a senior. And it's heartbreaking, right, to see somebody who can't afford to pay for their medicine, or they're in an uninsured house, really putting their entire financial estate at risk because, you know, as we had discussed before. So to me, I think it's just basically not understanding. I've heard some of the most, crazy descriptions of what a reverse mortgage is from consumers, you know, starting with, oh, the bank's going to own my house. And I said, well, do you have a forward mortgage on your house now? Yes. Well, the lien is exactly the same. Does Chase own your house because they have your forward mortgage? No. It's a lien on your house. It's the same as any other lien on your house. If you have an elderly person or couple who can't income qualify for forward mortgage, nor would they want to potentially have another monthly expense to pay when they're having a hard enough time, you know, even insuring their car and you know, paying their other bills, it's a great solution. It's an amazing product when it's used, you know, in the right way. I really don't see any negative ramifications. And as a 61-year-old who will be 62 this year, when I turn 62, I intend to put a reverse mortgage on my house. I'm not going to use it, but I'm going to have the line there. It's a great safety net so that if something ever were to happen to me, that my kids could just access money right away and then figure it out later on. It's just a nice, you know, credit line for an emergency to kind of have waiting for you. And I kind of warn seniors that the worst time to do it is when you really need the money, you know, in almost like a desperate situation, or when you're mentally, you know, cognitive skill set is not what it used to be, because it's harder to digest the numbers. And, you know, I feel that the earlier you do it, the better. And I think it's an amazing safety line. You could use the proceeds to buy a bigger life insurance policy that exceeds the amount that you took out on the reverse. You know, so there's a lot of unique ways to look at it. And one of my philosophies is when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. When people really understand the product and they know like the ins and outs of it, they will usually change their price, right away, because I think it's just a lack of even really understanding what the product is that makes it have a negative ramification.
One of the impediments to getting a reverse mortgage, if I understood from the information you sent me, is that if you have any kind of federal debt, if you owe income taxes, or if you have a student loan outstanding, then you can't get a reverse mortgage. Is that right?
Well, they're going to want you to pay off any other federal debt before they give you more government-insured money. And that's not just true for reverse. That's true for forward mortgage also. So being in default already with the federal government, it doesn't incite them to want to give you any more money until you get good with what you've already taken.
Are all of the reverse mortgages, or the vast majority of them, federally insured?
Well, we talked about some of the portfolio ones earlier, so those are not federally insured necessarily. They're more like hybrid programs, and they're portfolio. So an FHA loan would be, but some of the portfolio ones are not federally insured.
Many of the loans get sold. So whoever is the, correct me if the right term, originator, they process the loan and then they essentially get rid of it. They sell it to someone else. Is that what happens with a reverse mortgage?
Servicing lenders, the way that banking is done in modern times is banks, no businesses really do it all. Like, in other words, people and our companies have become very specialized. So in a mortgage process in banking, there's a source that would originate, as you had described. And then the loans are pooled into a portfolio and then shifted to a servicing lender. A servicing lender just, you know, manages escrow accounts and makes sure that the bills are paid properly. But yes, that would be true of I would say more than 90% of the mortgage paper, whether it's forward or reverse, that's originated in this country in current times.
Does it make a difference if you are getting your reverse mortgage from a small family-owned company such as yours versus a online faceless mortgage company?
The very worst place you could be in originating a forward or a reverse mortgage is with a big box lender. I take offense to the way their business models are designed, because they're totally not consumer friendly. You don't want to push one or push three. You actually need a human being. And in my opinion, as much as has changed with automation, there are certain things that will never be replaced by automation. Meaning, you know, if you need a consultation with your attorney, you have to sit down and explain, you know, the details. Well, with banking, it's very similar. So I pride myself, I've been a licensed banker for, let's see, more than 32 years. And as a licensed banker, I get on the phone with my clients and I split the threads with them and the minutia and make sure that they understand every single solitary detail without pushing a button or waiting a week for somebody to call them back, if you're even lucky enough to get a person. So there's consistency with my clients who work with me from the first intake call all the way to the day that they close. They have access to me. I answer my phone at night. I answer my phone on the weekends. I know that when you're going through this, it's a huge thing to you, and I treat people the way I would want to be treated. Now, if you would go to a big box bank, the business model is not set up to give you that type of personalized service. So that's why in these types of scenarios, to your point about, you know, post-closing, the loan gets shifted to a servicing lender. Why wouldn't you want to work with somebody who's holding your hand and guiding, shining the light for you from start to finish? Of course you would. I bring a lot of compassion and understanding to my clients. You know, you have to have, you know, the desire to really listen to what people, you know, their fears are. It's not just a mathematical, you know, paper signing format. There's a lot of you know, love, I would say, that goes into like really caring enough about people to make it feel like they're making the right decision because they are talking things through. That automated system with seniors, and especially with something like a reverse mortgage, is a definite recipe for disaster.
Is it more expensive? Are you paying higher interest rates or higher closing costs, or are the thresholds higher if you work with a smaller mortgage company versus one of the box banks, as you say, or the online mortgage companies? Is it more expensive?
No. And if you think about it, whether you're working with the big box bank or you're working with, you know, a smaller, more personalized bank, one person is getting paid to do the origination function. So if you go to Chase and the person you're talking to is getting paid, they get a salary, they get benefits, they get health care. If you're talking to somebody who's doing origination from a small bank, they're going to get paid from the servicing lender. So when the loan gets passed to the servicing lender says, thank you for doing the hard part, the origination, and they will pay the banker that way. So there's no additional fees to the consumer, but the consumer is getting a win-win scenario when they're getting the very best service and it's not costing them anything extra. I mean, that to me is a total win.
So the fee of the originator, say you in this case, is paid by the lender in the same way that when someone is selling their house, they're the ones, as things stand now, I believe, they're the ones that are paying the realty commission, the realtor and the broker?
Yeah, I mean, somebody gets paid. Like I said, if you walked in the door directly to a bank and, you know, that was going to actually be lending the loan, the money, their in-house salespeople get paid very well. They get paid salary and they get paid benefits. And it's very expensive to keep somebody on payroll. So people get paid, they just get paid in different ways. Paid as, you know, as what is called a warehouse banker. We get paid after the loan closes and it is sold to a servicing lender. Then that's when we get paid for our origination services.
Is it a percentage, as we were saying, like, say, for example, the 6% for real estate? Is it a similar percentage?
No, it's not a percentage. They usually have like a flat fee, origination fee. Some lenders, you know, have different ways, but no, it's not. The origination fee is not a percentage of the loan amount.
How much on average, if there is an average, because it seems like there's a very big range that we might be talking about in terms of the reverse mortgage amounts, but what would you say is the range of the fees that the loan originators earn from a reverse mortgage?
That's hard because when you say average, I've done reverse mortgages that are $70,000 and I've done reverse mortgages that are $7 million. So for me to tell you what the average, and then I put them through the FHA product, you know what I'm saying? So to come up with an average for when you have such a spread like that, I mean, I think that that's going to be skewed a little bit. I think if you look at the average reverse mortgage size, let's just tone it down a little and say, let's just say we're talking about what the average origination fees would be for a $300,000 loan, right? That would probably be a better question for me to answer, on point. So let's just say it was a $300,000 loan, the originator might receive something like $3,000. Or something, you know, along those lines for origination. But again, it's not just a percentage of the loan amount.
Some parents are going to be concerned about leaving something to their kids. How does the reverse mortgage impact their ability to do that? If there's something, there's a residual value to the home when they pass, then that still will go to the kids after the mortgage is paid. Am I understanding correctly?
I do encounter this a lot, and I this is one thing that really upsets me, because number one is I can leave the kids, if that's what they're most concerned about is their inheritance, more money by putting the reverse on than not. Let's go back to having the house insured and having the taxes paid. Having your parents sitting in an uninsured property, so the next storm that comes through, there goes your inheritance, right? Or your parents didn't pay their taxes, so there goes your inheritance. So I tell the kids, listen, if you're really that, you know, concerned more than your parents' well-being on just what the pure numbers look like, then why don't we do it like this? Take $150,000 reverse. Let's use a part of the monthly premium to purchase a term life insurance policy for your parents of $200,000. I just made their inheritance $50,000 more. you know, if the senior is using the money to make more money, meaning like invest in some of accounts, if they're paying 8% but they're earning 15%, there's a myriad of ways. Also, I've had seniors who have taken their inheritance that they intend to leave their children and or their grandchildren and found great pleasure in giving it to them while they were alive. Meaning, okay, my grandchildren want to go to college. How about I take money out of a reverse and fund my kids, my grandchildren's college education, or help my granddaughter buy her first house, or help my daughter who's has a physical limitation and is having a hard time as a single mother. Why wait until you pass necessarily to give your kids? I've helped seniors who have, you know, really felt really great about getting to actually see their kids graduate from college, or like I said, you know, start a business with the money that their grandparents left them while they were alive. So it's not better or worse. It's just different, right? If you want to wait until the very end and leave your kids the money that way, that's one way to do it. But another way to do it is, you know, maybe you like participate in watching your children benefit from what you're leaving to them. And that's your real legacy, in my opinion.
Give us an idea, if you would, Laura, maybe a couple of examples of what someone might expect in terms of that monthly income, assuming, and I don't know if this is realistic, but assuming a house that's in a good state of repair so that all of the money that you're borrowing isn't just spent on bringing the house to the safe, it to becoming a safe abode, just assuming that the owners have maintained it so that it's in a good state of repair, what kind of monthly income stream, or I don't know what the correct term is, but what amount of money can or might someone expect from a reverse mortgage? If you want to use, I don't know what the median is nationwide or statewide, whatever example number you want to share.
Okay, so this is really going to vary a lot more by your age than anything else, right? Going back to that point. So I would put somebody in the calculator to see. So if you're 62, you might only get 30% of the value, which isn't very much at all. Now, remember, it doesn't necessarily only come as a monthly payment. You can take it as a lump sum, or you can have that credit card, the checkbook that you could access when you need it, like a credit line, right? Now, if you're 82, you might be getting 80% of the property value, right? So that's more of the driving factor, is the value of the property times, you know, your age calculator. And that's really going to give us what the amount of money that we can pull out, whether it's in a lump sum or monthly value, and it's in a monthly amount, excuse me, in its entirety. It's an age-based equation.
What is the most common age at which reverse mortgages are sought?
The most common age. Well, 60s usually no. And the reason for that is you're getting such a small percentage out. Like, it's just a good idea to put the line on your house just so you have it as a safety net, as I had mentioned I'm going to do for myself. But I would say most people realize that they need the money when they're in their late 70s and early 80s. Let's be honest, we're living a lot longer than we used to, and we're living a much more rich life than we did in the past. So, you know, it's not uncommon. You know, my parents are in their late 80s, and they've got friends that are in their late 80s and 90s, and, you know, they're still flying around and playing pickleball, and it looks like they have another 10 or 15 good years in front of them. They're very vibrant. People are taking better care of themselves, and I think people are living longer. So, you know, some of the traditional retirement models that we had, you know, are not making it to the finish line and with the current economy. So I think, you know, you see people in their early 80s and they realize, I'm going to make it, but my money is going to run out before I do. So that's the sweet spot that I've noticed. And probably the last five clients I've worked with have been in their early 80s. If you wait much longer, it is hard for them to embrace the numbers, and you know, it is confusing for them. So I would say late 70s, early 80s would probably be a sweet spot of time where you would consider doing it, or just as needed, right?
What about the value of the property? Is there a threshold at which it's just not worth it, or a point at which people who have, I don't know, $3 million houses don't do this? What's the range?
I'm closing one on Wednesday. The property's worth $6 million, and it's a widow, and she's closing on a $3 million loan. She had a forward mortgage in place that she was paying $18,000 a month in interest on. Every story is different, you know? Every scenario is totally unique. Like a thumbprint, you know, it's there's no prototype of exactly what someone's situation is. But I can see that for me, the common denominator I'm finding in most of these cases is that there's somebody's loan. They either lost their spouse or they lost their significant other. And they're trying to potentially age in place, meaning, especially in areas like Florida, you know, yes, you could sell your condo, but it's hard to find something for less than what you have. The property values have appreciated so much. And seniors don't want to move and make new friends. And, you know, they're comfortable in their surroundings and they like where they live. So, you know, I'm finding that probably the most common denominator in the cases would be that most people who pursue reverse mortgages are either widowed or single for various reasons.
Is it mostly women then?
No, I wouldn't say that. Statistically, I'm doing just as many male widows than I am female. And not even widows, but just people, again, in this second chapter of life, you know, just to make the kids comfortable. I think that a lot of seniors cohabitate without getting married. And then one of the two passes and there's no benefits. There's, you know, for the surviving spouse or the surviving partner financially. And they're like, geez, now I have to move. Where am I going to go? So it makes it hard. So the reverse is a tool that will allow them to stay around their friends and family.
Do all types of properties qualify, for example, outside of the whole issue of condos and insurance and the new law in Florida? What about less conventional home varieties, say like trailer parks or RVs or manufactured homes? Are those eligible for reverse mortgages?
Some trailer parks are, and you have to own the land. And there's a lot of little qualifying quirks, if you will, about the value. So some trailers, yes, but it depends on the age of the trailer. There has to be these certain designations and stickers and safety stickers. And it's hard to find a trailer that does qualify, but they are doable. Co-ops, I would say, are a problem. Not that there's too many co-ops in this area. We definitely have more condos. But like a condo hotel would not be eligible, like we talked about before, which would be more like a short-term, like, you know, rental, like a condo that is used for vacation purposes. They don't usually meet any threshold for, the investors don't want that to be their collateral. They want it to be a community where people actually live, who live there, like are the homeowners, owner-occupied premises.
So something like, say, for example, Briny Breezes comes to mind in South Florida, where I think it's a co-op where all of the people in the municipality are owners of the municipality.
Right.
That would not work, right?
I don't think Briny Breezes would qualify. I've never got one in there. I'm very familiar with the complex, but by nature of the way that it's set up, it would not. I don't think it would qualify really for anything other than private funding.
I just read about a builder, I think it's in Washington State, that is building or has built I'm not sure what the term is, but essentially what they're selling is a room within a home. So you were paying, I think it was $200,000 was the starting price for a room inside the home. How would that work for a reverse mortgage?
That would not qualify as collateral. That's crazy when you really think about it. 200,000 for a room, right? If that doesn't speak to the climate of like the cost of living and with housing expense, that's really a testament to that. But yeah, something like that would not qualify.
Laura, thank you for joining us from Jupiter, Florida.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure. I'm happy to provide information. I pride myself and my resources, my experience, and most importantly, my real burning desire to help people. So I'm always happy to share information because that's where our true power lies.
Is there a book or a nonprofit website where people might go if they want to learn more about this?
The best way to learn more is to sign yourself up for consumer counseling. You can go to the AARP website. It's just a place to start and just type in consumer counseling for reverse mortgages and let a third party go through your scenario with your own numbers because things are very different from one person to the next, depending on a lot of components, right? So I always suggest people go through the independent counseling is the best place to start. Reading things in theory, they may not necessarily apply to your scenario. So I think it's the best place to get the most qualified and quality information, or of course to call someone like myself who's very happy to put the time in to go through and sort through it with you.
And to our audience, you have been listening to Laura Moritz, who is Senior Loan Originator at Classic Mortgage, who discussed reverse mortgages for seniors. To propose a guest for the show, you can email me directly at editor@hispanicmpr.com. That's editor@hispanicmpr.com.